How's everyone doing? Everybody have the food babies, the food baby processing from lunch, right? You gotta love the food baby. I had two plates, so I'm extra sleepy, which makes life great. We're gonna talk about social deviance inside of companies and basically company culture and how different cultures form. Now, the story that I'm gonna tell you has to do with my background working at a large software company in the Pacific Northwest. In the sort of between Bellevue, Issaquah area, right around there. When I was working there, I've had the opportunity to screw up a lot of projects. I had the opportunity to have a lot of success as well. So what I'm going to be showing you in this is it's a story on a project that I ran here on some interesting things that happened. And I went back and I looked at it, and I discovered this this thing called strain theory, which if you study criminology, it's something you're familiar with. But it's basically how people look at cultural norms and institutionalized means and try to get stuff done. And I'll show you some examples of that. The end of the day, in terms of this crazy agile stuff, what we all really want is a high-performing team, right? You've probably heard of that a lot. You know, high-performing team, and how do we get that? So let me just give you an example. Let me just baseline on the culture of the company that is under discussion. Does this look familiar to any of your companies? Right? Does anybody have the hero mentality? Anybody hero mentality? Yeah. I stayed up all night and got through it and powered through. It's like, yeah, but you got here at 11 in the morning, so staying until 10 at night is not really a great feat compared to those of us that like to get up at 6:30, get here at 7, and go home at 5. Right? A little bit of a different. The one big thing that I noticed, we said that we had a focus on quality. So for our group, we said we had a focus on quality, but like a lot of groups inside of large set software company, it was a struggle. It was a struggle. And these were not only in terms of how we worked, but it was really ingrained in the mindset and the mentality of the individuals, not only on the team, but also in the organization. This was one of our big challenges. Now, we were a pilot scrum team inside of the group, and we were the black sheep, if you will. Has anybody been the black sheep? Yeah, black sheep, right? Not fun. We worked in a fishbowl, meaning we had a, if you've been in any of the buildings around here, right, you'll see that, you know, some of the corners have these open spaces, and we were working in one of these open spaces. So people would walk by all the time and say, what are you guys doing? That looks like pair programming. Yeah, it is. That's stupid. Right? That's stupid. Yeah, it's not really stupid. We like it, but, you know, thank you for your opinion, your unsolicited opinion. Appreciate that. Anything else you would like to comment on? Yeah, you guys all smell. Okay, so morale was low. We had the group was dysfunctional. Okay, we had these issues, and what happened was we had a new manager came in. We had a new boss that came in, and he set some interesting goals. One of the goals that he made to his manager was to increase operational efficiencies by 50% without increasing headcount. Now, this is, of course, obviously, as you can hear, a challenge, especially for a dysfunctional organization. How do you increase operational efficiency by 50% without increasing headcount? That's really hard to do. So I had just rolled off of a project that I screwed up really good. All right, I was the tainted Irish beef. Nobody wanted me. And I go to him and I say, hey, Mike, I've been doing a lot of reading, and I have an idea for this goal of yours, and I think it's this crazy agile stuff. I think some of it might work. And he said, I agree. Okay, so what happened was we got a team together, we got a project together, and we went off and we started doing things. And life was great. People were happy. Okay, so we were working in the fishbowl. Everybody was happy, and things were good. Of course, we had to deal with the occasional person coming by and, you know, they would say pair programming is stupid, at which point that just spiraled endlessly throughout the day. The other reason people probably came by is because we had an espresso maker in our area. But, you know, push the button, get the coffee, life was great. How many people have seen this before? Tuckman's Model of team development, storming, norming, forming, performing, all that stuff, okay? Yeah, I rattled it off poorly. I'm trying not to read the slide. I don't like reading slides. So we were in the performing state. We were rocking and rolling. And the people that would come by, the people that would come talk to us, right, they were still dealing with the dysfunction in the organization. It started to become a challenge because people saw that we were happy. People saw that we were working normal hours. People saw that we had good code quality. There's actually a study that was done by some guys at Microsoft Research here, comparing our project to some other projects inside the org and inside the company. So it was really fun for us because we were able to come in at, 8:30 and go home at 5. And since we had our demos every couple of weeks, we had a weekend off. Anybody ever get a weekend off? Really? I mean, where you're mentally just, you unwind every other weekend? I haven't had one off for a long time. But we did it this time. Okay? It was really nice. So then what happened was we got new management comes in place 6 months later. We had a reorg. Anybody? Reorg? Yay. It's reorg season, isn't it? Yeah. It's no longer basketball season. It's reorg season. Okay? So we had new management come and play, and they said, we've got this new opportunity. It's great. It's huge. It's big. You have to have it. You have to do it. And in order to do it, what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to integrate with this other third-party wireless communication service as soon as possible. So they said to us, can you guys do it? Go, I don't know. Let us go look at our backlog. Give us a couple days. We'll figure it out, right? So we get on the phone with the folks at the other company. We'll call them Wireless Corp or something. And we figure out, we come back, and we go to management, we say, yep, we can do it. We can do it. And they said, great. Can you have it done in the next, 4 months? Absolutely not. When can you have it done? It'll take 9 months. Well, what do you need to do to get it done sooner? Oh, right. Here comes the let's go add people to the project to bring the project in earlier discussion. So we go back, and we figure it out, and we go, all right. If we were to add people to the project to bring the data in, who would we need to add? Well, we want to add Jay, and we want to add Mike. So we go back to the boss. Big boss guy, here's what we need. Here's the plan. You can have Jay, right? Because, we're managing him out, okay? You can have him, but Mike, you can't have him. He's on mission critical stuff. Super most utmost importance. But I thought my project was of the utmost importance. I thought my project was the special one. No. You can't have Mike. You can have Catherine. What was Catherine's skill set, do you think? Availability. Catherine's skill set was availability. Does anybody have that skill set today? Right? You like those people, right? They're available for a reason. Okay, so we get one guy that we wanted, and we get this other person that we didn't necessarily want. So like a good project manager, I'm tracking stuff, that actually the team is. I'm just, smiling and claiming credit. Things start going in the toilet. And this was the pattern, right? We started off slow, we started getting better, people were happy, and then, woo, death spiral. What's going on? So A lot of things started happening at this point, okay? A lot of things started happening at this point. One of them, well, let me give you a little bit of background more on how the team worked, and I've alluded to some of it. So we were obviously working in a co-located space, right? We were doing pair programming. We were doing merciless refactoring. We had continuous integration set up. We had, some would call, erroneous quality gates. I mean, people inside the group thought that we were silly. And 85% code coverage? Are you guys sure that you can hit that? We're hitting it. Okay? So we had a nice, clear definition of done that we had posted on our wall for everyone to see. So we were doing things that, in terms of the company culture, would be considered abnormal. Now, this was 5-6 years ago now. Abnormal, crazy, stupid, okay, and a variety of other words that I'm not going to repeat. So what happened was we would come in the morning, we would have our daily stand-up. Anybody doing daily stand-ups today? Anybody do crazy agile stuff? Okay, good. So a fair number of you. So we would have a daily stand-up, and it would go like this. And you tell me if you've experienced this before. Okay, so I would go up, and I would say, you know, hi, my name's Mitch. I'm a program manager. Sorry. But I'd say, you know, yesterday I got these tasks done, and here's some information. And today I plan on doing these, and I'm going to be pairing with Mike for a couple of hours. And then out of the corner you hear,
"That's stupid."
Right, now I have to do it in a feminine voice, but I really can't.
"That's stupid."
Okay. Your turn's coming, Catherine. Next person goes, okay? "I'm going to be working on this, and my impediment is that, and, you know, Catherine, I'd like to work..."
"I'm busy, I don't have time. I don't have time for that."
Okay? So we would go along, and then it would get to Catherine. And Catherine would go something like this. "This is a stupid meeting. I don't want to be in this meeting. I want to go back to my office and just check in 10,000 lines of code at the end of the month. Sprints are the dumbest thing ever. Why do you guys have quality gates? Why do you..." And of course, you could see the eyes, the faces, the hands of everybody just goes like this. It's like, "Oh no, not again." Because this wasn't like a weekly thing. This was not even a daily thing. This was 5, 6, 7 times a day. This was to the point of... one guy got so upset, he's holding the can of the talking rain, you know, the sparkling water. And me, another guy, and Catherine, we're all arguing. "It's stupid." "No, it's not." "Yes, it is." "No, it's not," right? We reverted to 5-year-olds. Okay, and I can see that now. I couldn't see it then. So he goes, "Enough!" And he squeezes the can, which happened to be full. Water sprays everywhere, all over everybody and everything. "Dude, what the hell? I'm sick of you guys." And he throws it down and walks out. This is where the team was, okay? This was not really a good state. So we had some other indicators that were telling us that we had problems as well, okay? Code coverage numbers were going into the toilet because... the code that, you know, said person was checking in was, I don't know, bad, poor, crappy, unsatisfactory. You know, it would be something that you would get out of, like, you know, Fisher Price, my first website that you buy down at Toys R Us. It would be that quality of code, only we weren't building Fisher Price, my first website, okay? All the integration points that we had been working in that had worked in the past began failing for unknown reasons. All the tests were green. Yet nothing works. Okay. That kind of sucked. Customers are sitting there going, "So like 2 months ago you demoed this, and now the feature disappeared." "Yeah, that's a problem too." Okay. Now bug counts went up. Now we generally ran a low bug number, anywhere from 5 to 10 bugs, not thousands. Okay. 5 to 10 bugs. Our bugs were now upwards of 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 on any given day. So we were spending a lot more time fixing bugs. And I really hate filing bugs. I don't like that. I think it's a waste of time. I'd rather just not have bugs, right? Bug-free software, it's much easier. Okay. This was the kicker for me. I had two team members come up to me and say, "Mitch, if you don't solve this problem, you know, we're looking. So fix it by Friday." So I said, "All right, I'll do my best." Okay. She would never want to work with anybody. She always wanted to work alone. So here's what I did. All right. Here's what I did, because I don't want my guys to leave. We were fun. We had a fun group. It was a good time. So I go talk to her direct manager and I say, "We've got a problem, right? Houston, we have a problem." "Yeah, about that. Well, she really doesn't have much anything else to work on right now, so you've got to keep her busy." "All right, you sure? Because, I mean, look at the data. The data shows..." Yeah, just stick it out. See if you can stick it out for me." Okay, he was going on vacation. He didn't want to deal with this. All right, so talk to her boss's boss. "Yeah, you know, this sucks, man. I got these guys, they want to quit, and this..." "She's a good person. you got to give her another chance. It's been 6 weeks. It's been 8 weeks. It's been 10 weeks. This is unacceptable. I got guys that are going, yeah, but she's got nothing else to do. She had to stay. So, of course, we took some action. What action did we do? What did we do? We gave her an opportunity to work on special projects. Maybe that was the answer.
Cut off her check-in rights.
Cut off her check-in rights. Yeah? What else did we do?
You put her in the sandbox working on stuff that's not important.
Yeah. Put her in the sandbox working on stuff that's not important. Yeah, here, can you go rerun this test? It's a manual one. It'll take you a week. All right. What we did was we fired her from the team. We fired her because as a program manager inside of large said software organization, my job isn't to keep people busy. My job is to deliver. And I'm going to deliver however I see fit, and I'm going to deliver with whatever means necessary. Now, I didn't want to walk into a situation and start telling the team what to do. I let them figure out what they needed to do, right? The right thing to do in my mind. Catherine wanted to be told what to do. I didn't want to do it, so we ended up firing her from the team. How do you think this went over with management? Not so well. Why?
She was available again.
What was the one over here?
I'm going to be late,
obviously, right? Because we all know adding people to the project only makes the project come in earlier. So what? It sort of went like this, okay? A couple weeks goes by. And her boss is still on vacation, so the skip level, he's roaming the halls, and he happened to be a senior guy, which was interesting. And he said, "Hey, you know, Mitch, what's going on? I haven't seen Catherine around working in the team space. And you guys are, I mean, I hate to say it, but you know, you're pretty hardcore about this stuff. I mean, to the point of, you know, a cult." And I said, yeah, she's not working in here anymore. Well, what's she doing? What's going on? I'm like, why don't we go into your office and have a conversation? So we sit down and I say, you know, well, might as well tell you now, we fired her from the team. Now, I wish I had a red apple because that's the color that his face turned. Beet red. He proceeded to chew me out, at which point I started off listening attentively. And then I decided that, I'm like, oh, yeah, uh-huh. And then it was just like, oh, dude, oh, you done? Okay? So after 10 minutes, I said, oh, hold on. Let me ask you one question. Obviously, I'm borderline being fired at this point. Let me ask you one question, so it didn't really matter. I said to him, what's more important, keeping people busy or delivering? And his answer was, that's not the point. And of course my response was bullshit. That is the exact point, because my job is to deliver. My job is to not keep people busy. My job is to deliver with high quality. My job is to motivate. My job is to lead. My job is to get stuff done. I had a blocking issue and I removed it. So, when I went home that night and told my wife that story, she was pregnant, she was not very happy. You said, what? Did you see this right here? Yeah. Good health insurance there. Yeah. Okay. But, you think things got better? Of course they did. Things got better. We got right back to where we were. Why? Because the one person that we got, the guy that we wanted, what we were looking for was mindset. What we were looking for was cultural balance. That person didn't really have the skills to work on our project, but you could probably learn skills faster than you can learn competencies. You can learn skills faster than you can learn culture. So when we brought him in, we said, this is how we work. Are you okay working this way? Never done it before, but it sounds like fun. I'll give it a shot. Compare that to the other person. Are you comfortable working this way? You guys suck. Right? Probably probably not a good cultural fit. So then the question becomes, how did we, because we were part of this same larger engine, how did we get, things got better. How did we get to be independent? How did we split from the organization? Because we all had that same mindset, right? We would look at other people. The first XP project I worked on was in 2001. And I remember saying to several friends, it's an XP project, but XP's already shipped. Right? Wait, what? That's a waste. That's stupid. Right? Refactoring? No, we got to get it right the first time. Right? I remember having these conversations. So this was the same sort of mindset that was in there. Now, I went off and did some homework on Merton's strain theory. And you can read this, okay? And what you see, I wish this thing did have a laser, because you have things that are balanced. You have a way to achieve your goals, and you have accepted cultural norms. So example, right? Look at the bottom one down there. I want to buy a house and I want to buy a fancy car. Now, society says that you should probably get an education. You should work your way through the ranks and do what's needed to achieve those goals. But I have alternatives, don't I? I have alternatives. I have a friend who happens to live in a seedy neighborhood, right? He's got a kick-ass Benz. What do I have? I got a 1965 Beetle that barely runs and leaks oil, and I'm embarrassed to take my girlfriend out in it. He didn't go to school. He dropped out of high school, as a matter of fact. Yet he's got a nice car and a great house. What have I got? Nothing. So what do? I switch professions. I stop being a student and start selling drugs. Now, is that acceptable in terms of society? Yes or no? No. No, we have laws against that, right? There are laws that say you should not do that. And if you do and you get caught, you go to jail. And that becomes the balance. This becomes the balance. So, Morton has these five concepts in terms of strain. Conformity. I would say that most of us conform. Okay? Most of us conform. We accept the goals. We accept the societal norms. Now, there's other people that are ritualistic, and you probably know some of them. Right? They've given up hope. They've given up hope. Oh, I'm never going to achieve my goals. I'm never going to retire before I'm 80. You know, whatever it is, they're just slogging through the day. Unhappy, unmotivated. But they're still following the rules of society. You know those people? You may have been one. I have. Okay, and I decided that I didn't like that. Retreat. I'm just going to retreat. I give up. I'm not going to do anything. Okay, and then we have the fun ones. Rebellion and innovation. Now, in terms of rebellion, okay, in terms of rebellion, here I've got my academic success in protesters. In terms of rebellion, you could say that, you know, I'm in college, or I'm a professional, whatever it is, but I'm really sick and tired of the government. You can pick the Occupy Pick City Here protesters, okay? I was really doing this. I still kind of like that. I'm still going to follow through in my college career, but I really want to go fight the system. The system is broken. The system is corrupt. I'm going to fight it, and I'm going to use some peaceful means, hopefully, to achieve that. Right? And then innovation. And this is, you know, this could be an example of this. When we think about, which one's back? When we think about conformity, think about your days when you were in college or university. Okay? Forward. You want to study and pass an exam. You want to get an A in your class. What do you have to do? Study hard. You don't have to cheat. You have to study. Cheating is innovation. Right? Cheating is innovation. Do I really need to study? No, I just need to be close enough to the smart guy. And I need to be able to see over his shoulder. And maybe I can pay him off and he'll, you know, there you go. Innovation. But I don't have to study. If I get caught, of course, I'm going to be in trouble here. Okay? So I'm using different means. Again, this is where the innovation stuff leads to crime. This is what leads to the bad behavior. So when we look at this, what I like to do is I like to flip this around. And I say, instead of the societal norms, I keep the institutionalized means, and instead of the cultural goals, it's the company goals. The goals of the company, okay? Meaning, how are we going to work, and how are we going to achieve them? What are the goals that we want to achieve? How are we going to do them? Now, in terms of software, right? In terms of software, it's pretty easy. Because conformity, what's conformity for us in terms of software? We get up every morning, we go to work, what do? Code, bang on the keyboard, generate some stuff, right? Check it in at the end of the day. Oh, I had a good day, I got some stuff done. Right? Come in the next day, do it again. I accept the means and I am succeeding at the goals. I have good software. Now, ritualism, right? I just hate my job, I come in. Here's where you start seeing defects being introduced. Now, you'll see them, of course, with conformity, but with ritualism, you're going to start seeing more because people become lackadaisical. They become less caring about what it is they're doing. They're not proud of the work they're doing. They're just doing stuff. Retreatism, right? Again, you can see the downward spiral here. We start filtering down like ritualism, only worse. Now, innovation and rebellion, okay? You got to think about the team that I'm discussing. We were in a culture that said, you know, big upfront design, go do all your coding, go do all your testing, go through your 3-month or 6-month or 2-year stabilization period, and then eventually you'll ship something. Okay? We said that was broken. So what we did was we looked at conformity. We looked at the accepted means and threw them out the window. You with me on this? We looked at the accepted means and threw them out the window and said, that is wrong. What you believe, organizational culture, is wrong. So for us, what we're going to do is we're going to go do things slightly differently. We're going to be achieving the same company goals, but we're using our own means to get them. Do you start seeing a problem here, or what happened with Catherine now? Am I painting this picture for you? Okay. The company was entrenched. We were doing things differently. We were rebelling. We were rebelling. And because we were rebelling and experimenting with new things, indicators that told us that we were doing the right thing were those up on the screen. People were happy. Code quality was high. Tests worked. We actually were able to ship at the end of every production or at the end of every sprint to production. Now that really hurt mentally a lot of people. Because operations, what did operations say to us?
Slow down.
You can't ship every 2 weeks. Why not? Well, we can't handle it. What do you need to handle it? Well, we need everything to be automated. Okay. Boom. Product backlog item. There. Double-click that, run that, and you have this little testing tool that we built for you, and it's going to go out and do all these great fancy things. It should take you about 6 minutes. Can we release now? Yes. Can we release more than once a day? Yes. Awesome. Do you think that irritated some of my fellow program managers? Right? Because they would come to me, how are you able to release whenever you want? Because I made it easy. It's not a painful experience. It's not like going to the doctor and getting a colonoscopy. You don't want to do that on a daily basis. Right? Probably you don't even want to do it at all. But you can see here now where we were. We rejected the institutional means. Yet Catherine was still stuck in conformity. Okay? And this was the root cause of this you guys suck discussion that we would have on a daily basis. Now the other person, Jay, he looked and he's like, sounds good to me, let's try it. He was open. Again, because the people that we picked, the people that we went to in the beginning, when we said these are the people we want, we were very specific about the mindset of those individuals. If you're going to bring these people on a team in hopes of achieving an earlier release date, it has to be these people. No. Okay, well, how do you politely say you're screwed? Right? It's kind of hard to do. So, as we moved, and as the team progressed, the distance between us and the rest of the organization grew. The organization started seeing us as rebellious. You guys are rebelling. You guys are creating your own goals, because we had our own goals. Thou shalt not check in if code coverage is less than 85%. That was not a goal of the organization. It was a goal of ours, because we desired high quality, we desired working software. Okay? And we found ways to do it. In fact, Newkirk, who's not in here anymore, right? He and Ward, anybody see Ward yesterday? Or day before? Saw him today? So Ward and Jim and David Anderson, when they all worked here, Jim's still here, obviously, but when they all worked here, these guys coached our team. And what a great set of coaches, right? So we were very fortunate. A lot of the discussions that we had were around culture and understanding why we were doing things. If you don't understand why you do something, should you do it? No? Some say no? Anybody say yes? You should do it anyway? Who has kids? Raise your hand. I got kids. Okay? Do little kids like to take baths? 4 years old. They like to take a bath? They're going to go outside, they're going to play, they're going to come in, they're going to be covered in mud head to toe. What the first thing they're going to tell you is they're going to say, I'm not dirty. And you're looking at them going, look in the mirror, Junior, you're filthy. Oh, no, 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 I'm going to go sit on the couch and eat. You're getting in the bath. I don't want to get in the bath, right? Yep. And then when they're in the bath, what happens? I don't want to get out of the bath. If you ask a four-year-old why they're taking a bath, why it's important to be clean, will they understand why? No. Hopefully you all understand why. Right? It's important to take a shower or take a bath on a regular basis so, number one, you don't stink. Number two, you don't spread disease. Number three, it wakes you up in the morning. Right? There's a variety of reasons, but we all understand why we're doing things. So in terms of culture, this is what we were weeding out. We understood why. People looked at us as rebels because they did not understand why we were doing things. That created a huge gap. A huge gap. Okay? And how do you think this went come performance review time? You would imagine not well, but it's really funny when you're able to say, yeah, we deliver on time, we have the happiest team in the group, and the highest quality. And, by the way, our stakeholders are ecstatic with our work. And we're only working 7 hours a day. So it actually worked out pretty well. Now, it didn't work out well for everybody else because we raised the bar tenfold. Right? We raised the bar tenfold. But, you know, Catherine was gone. So, the deviant was removed from the organization. Or, I'm sorry, she's still here. But removed from us, and that, you know, when I look back at that, if you do this, if you find yourself in this situation, it's really, really hard to deal with, to the point of the example I gave you. I mean, I almost got fired, and maybe I should have been. I probably would have been had I not had a team of guys standing behind me saying, if he goes, we're gone too. Right? So that was a big risk. It was a big challenge. But it comes back to standing up for principles and values, which is hard to do. So if you add people to a team, what you need to be aware of isn't their skills. I do not look at skills when adding people to a team. How many of you actually work at Microsoft? Any of you? Handful? Okay, so there's a guy who works here now named Arlo Belshi. You've probably seen him on the Agile alias, because it's the Arlo alias now, I hear. Okay, so he contributes a lot, and he has a lot of great things to say. Come on, brain. Kickstart. He has a lot of great things to say. I met him in 2005. He started coaching our team in the beginning, And he really set in our mind the idea of, not culture. This is a long one. Long brain fart. Not culture, competency. Thank you. There we go. Unblocked. And he wrote a paper in 2005 called Promiscuous Pairing in Beginner's Mind. Anybody heard of that? Okay, I did a follow-up one in 2006 based on our experience on this actual team. And in that, he does the beginner's mind thing. The person that is least qualified to do the task should do the task. Okay, the least qualified implementer. Because if you're least qualified to do it, you see everything. The blinders are off for you. It's just like kids, right? They don't have experience with the things that we have experience with. Therefore, they're open to trying new things. They've never done it before. Sure, what the heck? Now, as we get older, we get a little more crotchety. Oh, that won't work. That's a stupid thing to do. How do you know? Have you ever done it? No, but it can't possibly work. Does anybody ever get that? You know, those of you that are doing the crazy agile stuff today, do you ever get that from other people? That just doesn't work. How do you know? I don't know. But it just can't. Just doesn't make sense. Oh, it sounds like you're mentally challenged. Of course, you don't say that. Because that would be bad. Okay, I can say that because I don't work here anymore. All right. Did I hit back or forward? What's going on? There we go. That's the one I wanted. Okay. Adding people that fall under ritualism or retreatism, right, you can see is death by a blunt object. The other one is a double-edged sword. You don't know what you're going to get. Which is why as you go through and you start looking for people, what I will do, and this is going to sort of sound bad. People ask me, they always say to me, how do you build teams? And I say, well, availability is obviously the last thing. Because if somebody's good, you can generally find a way to get them. Okay. Number one, are you open to working in a team space? Number two, are you open to critique? Meaning, do you have the mindset of an adult? Do you have the mindset of a teenager? Or do you have the mindset of a toddler? Who knows the difference between those three? Give me a trait of a toddler. Those of you that have or had toddlers.
Mine,
I want it. How does that associate to work?
Very poorly.
Very poorly. But, you know, you can identify toddlers at work. No, we have to do it like this. We have to. And then they freak out. How about a teenager? Right? Give me a trait of a teenager.
It's not fair.
It's not fair. The life is so hard. Can I just sleep another 8 hours? Right? I've got one of these at home now. It's entertaining, I think is the right word to use, entertaining. Okay? But teenagers, what? They can, if they were able to apply themselves, they would solve world hunger and every other problem in the world, right? Problem is, it's like, do that tomorrow. Don't have time for that. Okay? Can you teach a teenager anything? Not really. No, it's a challenge. Okay? The poor high school teachers. It's really a challenge. Okay? Do you know teenagers at work? Yeah, you do. We all know teenagers at work. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that the high-performing team that I was talking about here, do you think we were a collection of toddlers or teenagers? No. We were a collection of adults. What's a trait of an adult? Come on. You're all supposedly adults. What's a trait of an adult?
Compromise.
What's another one?
Collaboration.
What's another one?
Communication.
Openness. Right? You heard Peter talk earlier about pair programming. Does pair programming require openness? Oh, yeah. Right? Because if you're the guy in the company, you know the guy on the pedestal, the guy that knows everything, but he doesn't write any code. But the aura of wisdom that surrounds that person is so great, so influential that thou shalt not question the knowledge. And then suddenly you pair and you're like writing code and you're like, come on, old man, let's go. Oh, I'm trying, but I'm only good at COBOL. It's like, wow, welcome to 1995. Okay? It becomes harder because you expose people and you become exposed yourself. Okay? You have to be open to this stuff. So that's where the open-minded comes into play. When you have the deviant, what should you do? I mean, you could do what I did, fire him. And I would actually recommend that you do that sooner than later. But you have to do it nicely. Right? You have to. Because there's a lot at stake here. And this comes back to company culture. What does the company do? I was on a plane and I was sitting next to the CTO of Kayak.com. And he was telling me about his company and the culture of the company. And it was great because it was a 6-hour plane ride from Boston to Seattle in a headwind. So we had a fantastic conversation around the culture of his organization and how small they are and how it is understood that everybody is responsible for everything. Okay, so I'm going to come in and I'm going to do this, and if I don't know how to do this, I will ask for help. And if I don't ask for help, I'll probably be canned. Because it's a learning organization. We have to grow, we have to get better. Right? And if you don't have that, if you have the mindset that, you know, the best practice is just good enough, well, this is where everybody starts getting leapfrogged in terms of technological innovation. I could pick on many examples, but you can all probably think of several yourself. Right? Removing the bad performer, even if they are the highest performer on the team, they will likely hold the team back, which is detrimental. But you have to be able to see it. You have to be able to see it. So I got about 10 minutes for questions.